and welcome to the Trash Tapes podcast as part of the Enigmatic Productions Network. If you love bad cinema and incredible deep dives into cult film, then you have come to the right place. So if you like what you hear and want to support us, you can do so by donating some funds to our Buy Me a Coffee website, along with the Acast supporter feature. All of these can be found in the description below. And now, on with the show.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
About to experience trash cinema. Oh my God.
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Trash Tapes. One man's trash is another man's treasure. I'm your host, Johan Chappell, your host and the inflictor of pain, and I am joined by my usual victim and DJ, Edward Harvey. How are you doing?
Well, I'm a bit poorly, but I'm getting through it. I'm all right. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing okay. You know, I've had some time to myself and to zone in and to make myself feel better. And then I decided to watch this movie, and now I feel like I'm completely in a flux again. So,
yeah, I don't know whether when I'm suffering from an infection and feeling nauseous, I don't know whether this is the right movie for that. But
no, I don't think the movie we decided to watch that is perfect for anyone who feels remotely ill or trying to find themselves. But the reason why we decided to do this one before we go into it quickly is because obviously we did a video a little while ago looking at the original movie and the latest version of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I think that was a really good conversation. I think we really discussed how well and how good both movies are in their own way.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's weird how the sequels have kind of just taken on their own kind of thing. Like even like 2 is made by the same director.
Yeah.
But it's just like, it is crazy how different they all are. But
it's
there's often a reason behind it, though, isn't there?
And that's what we're going to talk about today. So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're going to talk about The Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. Oh, boy.
13 years ago, audiences across America were horrified by the savagery of a faceless killer. In the wake of this bizarre rampage, he vanished. Now, after more than a decade of silence, he has come out of hiding. Chainsaw Massacre 2, The Buzz is back, directed by Tobe Hooper.
It's so weird, this movie, because yeah. I only saw it for the first time, like, recently to do this podcast.
Yes.
And when I first heard about this movie, I thought it was by some random director. I didn't think it was by Tobe Hooper.
Yeah.
But Tobe Hooper's reasoning behind like doing a completely different tone was just the fact that he wanted to sort of shock, like the original shocked and it was outrageous in a different whole sort of serious way. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to get that sort of vibe in terms of outrageous, but just switch it and just do something else with it and be outrageous in a completely different way. And I think he achieved that at least.
Yeah, it's interesting. The story behind this movie is very fascinating because, like you mentioned, he wanted to do something completely different. In fact, he always argued, actually, in interviews, that the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, to him anyway, was kind of a black comedy. But I feel like if there was any humor other than a few jokes here and there, that was completely missed by most people.
Well, I think I suppose he was trying to put some like satire of the time, but that's about it. I mean, it's only funny in his own head. God.
I can imagine Toby Hooper being his own best favorite fan. Like he said, "Oh, this is going to be so funny," and everyone, no one gets the joke. gets the joke. But speaking of which, just so people are not clarified, but a Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, or sometimes called Part 2, is a 1986 American black comedy slasher movie directed by our man Toby Hooper, and it's a sequel delivering on the fact that it's been literally this, like I say, a decade of silence. The buzz is back, and it's got a fascinating backstory behind it. And what's interesting is that you've probably done a little bit more research in this movie than I have, because you've actually sat down and watched the 90-minute documentary behind the making of this movie.
Yeah. There's lots of there's lots to say about it. The interesting thing you mentioned before we started about like the screenplay, the screenwriting process.
Yeah.
And that was incredible because it was rewritten constantly as they were shooting. Yeah. Usually screenwriters would actually absolutely hate that process. Yeah. But the screenwriter was absolutely loving it, and he loved the fact that it was a weird kind of energy, the fact they had to do everything so quickly. And they shot the film I think it was 6 weeks or something. It's ridiculous like that. And yeah, it just had to completely rewrite bits. And the screenwriter was saying that, you know how when you get a script that's rewritten like constantly, you have to change the color of the page to make sure that's a new bit of that it's been added.
Yeah.
And the screenwriter was basically saying that it ended up being like a rainbow, that script, because
pretty much it kept constantly changing on the fly. And there's a couple of reasons why. So we have to go back a little bit earlier with this movie, because this is a canon movie. So this is the second canon movie we've done on the podcast, by the way. Second.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it's only the second. Like we should be doing more of this nonsense. But basically, Toby Hooper had a free movie deal with Canon. Okay.
Yeah.
So the free movies he did were, well, be honest about, I think all of these would be on the podcast at some point. The first one he did was after he did Poltergeist, which secretly has been known for quite some time that really he didn't totally direct it. He was mostly shadow directing while Steven Spielberg as a producer was doing most of the directing. That's what I have heard about that. But after that, he signed a free movie deal with Canon. One of them, the first one, was Life Force, which we are totally doing at some point because that movie is bonkers, right?
Is that the energy vampire one?
Yes.
Yes.
Energy vampires with Patrick Stewart. So that's what we're going to do at some point. The next one after that was a remake of a 1953 film called Invaders from Mars, right?
Oh, now, yeah, I've seen that. I think I've seen all of these canon movies. That one is very bad. That is definitely trash tapes worthy.
They're both bad, to be honest, in their own way. But the point being is because they didn't do very well, like because these movies did not do well, obviously the third movie, Canon kind of put a lot of pressure onto Toby. Say, look, your third movie has to be blockbuster, has to be gangbusters, right? Mm. And so Canon were really pushing Toby and a few others saying, your biggest movie was Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We need the sequel, right? So they say, okay, we're going to do a sequel. Now, what's interesting was that there was already an idea for a sequel back in 1980. Which was going to be apparently with the original writer of Texas Chainsaw. The original movie was literally going to be where instead of just one house, it was going to be an entire town of cannibals.
Right, okay.
And the title, and it was going to be a similar-ish, it was going to be somewhat of a slight black comedy, but still have some levels of scares to it and everything. I believe it's literally going to be called Beyond the Valley of the Texas Chainsaw, right? Mm. Something weird and epic sounding like that. But that was floating around and it never happened. at all, and that's just kind of been left on the shelf because I think it was too demanding or too big.
It's strange, isn't it, that Toby Hooper was still well up for doing a sequel, because it looks like one of those kind of movies where the original was such a classic.
Yeah.
I thought it would have been like a bit like John Carpenter and Halloween, that kind of thing, where it's like, no, I don't want to do a sequel. That was its own isolated story.
Yeah.
But that was not the case with Toby Hooper. He was always wanting to do a second Chainsaw movie.
He was always up for it, but by the sound of things, he always wanted it to be different anyway. So the fact that when this happened and they were making the movie, and it turned out to be the polar opposite, quite literally the polar opposite of what the original movie was, this doesn't surprise me. Funny, because Canon are notorious for being, how can I put this, they're a bit sleazy and cheap, right? The producers are renowned for literally accepting anything under the sun as long as it is on trend, right?
Yes.
Or whatever. So they gave this version, they gave a version of the script of this movie to the producers and Canon, and they accepted it full flank, with the producer only reading the first five pages. And just like, perfect, great. And the right. first five pages is the least bonkers of the whole movie, other than the really cool opening scene. So I bet they read that bit going, this is going to be brilliant. We'll accept this without realizing that everything else happens.
I know. And then when they actually started to see some like footage back, some like sort of dailies and some kind of rough cuts.
Yeah.
Apparently they were just saying, we need to see the monsters. We need to see the monsters. So a lot of the comedy aspect that Toby Hooper and the screenwriter had set up that they loved, like having a very sort of just obvious comedy.
Yeah.
They had to scrap a lot of elements that made the story, you know, more connected, to put more gore and like monster type stuff in there, because Canon wanted that.
Which is why there's a huge whiplash between the funny stuff and the gory stuff in this movie. It's a lot of gore.
So we made the cut. And then we had a screening, cast and crew screening. And the audience laughed throughout the film. And the screening was in the screening room at Canon. And at the end of the screening, Toby comes to me and says, uh-oh. And we go into a meeting with Canon, and they say, we want to see the monsters. We want to see the monsters. That's what the audience wants. We want to see the monster. So take out all this stuff. And they were like stunned that the film was funny, which if you'd read the script, you would know that it was funny intentionally. I don't know why they didn't get that, but that was the moment at which things changed.
Because Canon saw the results of his last two movies, they sat there going like, we don't trust you. So $1 million of the budget was removed before he even started filming.
Yeah.
So that's not good. And then because of that, they had to constantly keep rewriting because of situations that occurred throughout. So by the end of it, you've got a movie that is such a mishmash of stuff that by the end of it, it was launched out in this sort of weird, bizarre Frankenstein way. And then on top of that, the movie originally was 2 hours long, with the script being 2 hours long. But Canon have a thing, if you remember our Cobra episode, they like their movies to be nothing more than 100 minutes long, for the fact that it means you can play the movie more often in cinemas. Not whether or not whether it narratively needs to be like 90 minutes or more, you know. It'll trim off the fat. No, we need to play this further. So there's about 25 pages of script that is permanently removed from this movie, which is all the funny stuff, I assume, and a lot of the character stuff that was supposed to be in this movie that just seems to be swept under the rug really quickly.
True, but there is a lot of cool character stuff still there.
Yeah.
The movie's strength is some of the wacky characters, isn't it? Well, I say some, all of them. Like, all the characters in it, pretty much. There's some standouts, but, like, and they definitely made the villains almost like action figure type characters, didn't they?
Totally.
You could make a cartoon. You could tone it down, and you could make a cartoon out of those characters. like Toxic Crusaders, like because this is a bit of a trauma kind of vibe, this movie, isn't it?
And totally.
They did that with the Toxic Avenger, didn't they? They did it with Toxic Crusaders. You could do a similar thing with Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Why? No, because I'm now terrified. Imagine if you were a kid and suddenly saw a Leatherface action figure.
Kids would love that stuff, you know. You know they would.
It's like, put on the dress and the chainsaw. Brrr. Only $9.99.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely brilliant. In terms of controversy and the reception of this movie, let's just say, first of all, like, one thing I love is, have you seen the original poster for Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2?
Is the original poster the Breakfast Club parody?
Yes, I'm going to show this to you now on the thing. Look at that.
Yeah, they basically, what's the screenwriter's name? I keep saying screenwriter without saying his name.
His name is L.M. Kit Carson.
Right, so yeah, he was basically, when they were writing, well, they thought the original movie, they were after hippies, they were killing hippies, right?
Yes.
So what could they target in the 80s? Yuppies, of course.
Yuppies and the Brat Club.
What's the most, like, at that particular time, you had John Hughes making all the Brat Pack movies, didn't you?
Yes.
So it's an obvious, cool, like, parody to have them as the Breakfast Club members on the posters. But that would go totally over Cannon's head, I think.
That's the thing, is, like, it seems to be a lot of red flags to the producers saying, like, this is going to be a comedy or a satire or a parody. This isn't going to be an actual Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. And it's just funny how it went over their heads until it got launched. And oddly enough, it seems like it got over a lot of heads of most people, because the reception for this movie is mixed to media, is very mixed. A lot of people basically said at the time that it was not good. For example, if you look at Roger Ebert, he said that it was a one out of four movie. It lambasted the film by saying it goes flat out from one end to the other, never spending any time on pacing, on timing, on anticipation of horror. It doesn't even pause to establish the characters themselves. And Dennis Hopper has the most thankless task of playing a man who spends the first half of the movie looking distracted and vague, and the second half just screaming with dual chainsaws, which personally, that sounds amazing to me.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was deliberately Dennis Hopper's intention with that character, to look confused and look sort of chaotic.
And tired.
Because he's a method actor.
Yeah.
I heard from the making of, basically, before they start said action, Toby Hooper would spin round on the spot to make himself dizzy, so that when he's in the take, his eyes kind of looked a bit like all over the place and looked crazed.
That's absolutely hilarious, seeing Dennis Hopper running around spinning in the spot, just going like, "Wee!"
Yeah, I mean, it's his character in this. I've got a clip of him, actually. I haven't got many, because the thing is, a lot of Dennis Hopper's things that we'll talk about are visual.
Yes.
But just to give you an element of, like, his character with this clip.
Sure.
Oh, Lord. Help me beat this stranger that walks beside me and takes away my strength. Lord, you show me the end. Show me what I fear, so I don't fear it no more. It's the devil's playground.
Such manic energy. Oh my god, that is... He's just going for it here as well.
So basically, what's happening there, if you haven't seen the film, is he has gone to, like, their hideout, basically, the killer's hideout. And at this point, he's gone full, like, crazy. It's like, if you can't beat him, join him kind of thing. Not in, in terms of like energy, because he's got, he's wielded himself with like multiple chainsaws.
Yes.
And he's basically wanting to destroy their lair, basically.
Which we'll get to, because the lair is fucking magnificent. So yeah, he goes around just trying to destroy the foundation of this lair and just chop. And what's funny is he does this and there's clearly debris and stuff falling on him. He just keeps going with this wonderful manic energy, which I personally feel is the central saving grace of this movie. Whether or not he did say, though, Dennis Hopper did say that this, at the time, this was the worst movie he ever worked on. He absolutely hated this movie. But then afterwards, he said the exact same thing for the Mario movie. So, which one's worse, I wonder?
I mean, this was like around the time of Blue Velvet, wasn't it?
Yes.
And Blue Velvet's a similar character. Well, not similar, but it's similar kind of craziness. Mm. And there is actually even a similar line in this, because I feel like a lot of it might be kind of ad-libbed at times.
Yeah.
Some of his crazy lines, because in Blue Velvet, he says to Jeffrey, "I'll send you straight to hell." And in this movie, he says, "I'll send you back to hell." Almost exactly the same. It's the same line, pretty much. It's like, at this point, he turns into Frank Booth when he goes angry in this film.
Don't be a good neighbor to her. I'll send you a love letter. Straight from my heart, fucker. You know what a love letter is? It's a bullet from a fucking gun, fucker. You receive a love letter from me, you're fucked forever. You understand, fuck? I'll send you straight to hell, fucker.
Staying on the topic of Dennis Hopper's character, though.
Yeah.
What did you think of the scene where he gets his chainsaws from the shop?
All right. The bit in the chainsaws in the shop. Well, the thing is, I want to talk a little bit just before we get to that bit. Because before then, he seems very mellow, right? Like he almost feels tired. Like he's the whole point of Lefty as a character. He is the uncle of Franklin and Sally, I believe, right?
He's
the uncle, right? And he's been going, he's been spending the last 10 to 13 years going on a mission to try and find the killer family, right?
Lieutenant Enright, sir. We heard you might be headed this way. Did you come over for the big game?
You know why I'm here.
Yes, there's something about chainsaw killers, your brother's kids killed. But that was 14 years ago, sir, way down in South Texas. Now, these are other kids. This is just an accident. Just a couple of wild punks out raising hell.
Yep. One of those boys so wild sawed his own head off going 90 miles per hour. Hell. Hell's exactly what they raised.
And so he looks genuinely tired and numb, and he doesn't respond much. There's no manic energy coming out of him, like, at all for the first part of the movie, which is what arguably Roger Ebert properly described, until the chainsaw bit, where he goes in and he just looks at it, go like, he gets the biggest chainsaw there is. See, he gets a log.
Well, see, I kind of read that as like it's all been bubbling under the surface.
Yeah,
you know, like, it didn't feel like too much of a hard turn for me, because I feel like he's got so much anger in him that he's not expressing.
Yeah,
that when it does come out, it just all comes out all in one go, and that's kind of the arc of his character, I think.
No, definitely, I'm not arguing that. I totally agree. Like, it's so subtle, because you can see moments. He had loads of weird moments in his character until he gets a chainsaw in his hand, and literally embraces the madness. And I love it, because the shop owner of the chainsaw is just looking at, almost with glee, going like, oh my god, I've never seen someone this crazy before playing with a chainsaw.
I know, that's the only bit of that scene that I thought was quite like weird, in terms of like, I didn't get why it was happening, because I look in the shop. He's going through all these, looking at all these different chainsaws. This is basically, by the way, it's a shop. It's pretty much just sells chainsaws. But all the walls are just different types of chainsaws. And he's picking them up. Yeah. And he's like, he's got one in each, one small one in each his hand. And then he tries dual chainsaws. He tries them like they're like sort of two handguns. Yeah. And then he picks up a massive one. And yeah, the shop assistant is just staring at him in a very odd way. But the scene's so amazing is because Dennis Hopper doesn't say one word.
He just screams.
He puts the money down, doesn't even ask how much they all are. He just puts a wad of cash on the table. I'm having these, and this is the money you're getting for them.
No arguments there. Like, he literally said, like, look, I'm here for a chainsaw. I think he was thinking poetic justice. It's like saying, hey, you know, I heard about the chainsaw stuff. Let's do the chainsaw thing. And he overdoes it. I think he definitely overcompensates because he gets one giant F-off chainsaw, which I mean, I didn't even know you can make them that big. And two very tiny ones, which are hilarious, which he uses them like pistols almost.
Yeah. But the shop assistant is sort of so really confused and silent the whole time, just looking quite shocked. But as soon as Dennis Hopper starts testing him out on the log outside, like you said, he goes like almost gleeful, which is I found that very odd.
It's almost as if he was like gang off on it. It's like, oh, I've never seen a man play with a log so hard in my life. It's so bad. But that's the reason why we're talking about that part now, and then we'll talk a bit more about him as we go in. But the reason why is because that to me is the striking image of this entire movie, right? The movie, the scene is just Dennis Hopper with three chainsaws screaming down a hallway, right? That's the image that's gonna stick in my head for the rest of time, let alone anything else. I'm gonna have nightmares and see Dennis Hopper screaming with three goddamn chainsaws. The other characters, though, are quite interesting, and I think it's about time we talk about them. So one of the things I want to talk about first is this one member that comes back from the original movie, which is Cook.
Yeah.
Cook comes back.
And that's the original actor, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. So he comes back originally, and I love his character because he's still, basically, by the sound of things, he's still playing himself from the original movie. He's just a little bit more fast-witted than anything else. He says some very quirky lines. And the time you can tell that he's being himself and a little bit more quirky is when we first reintroduced to him, when it is the year, is like the annual chili cook-off.
I have a clip of this because this, listen to this, right? It makes him sound like he's a rock star. It is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
He's Dallas's favorite caterer. I think he's kind of cute. Mm-hmm. The last Roundup Rolling Grill chef, Drayton Sawyer!
Yeah! Thank you, Cleveland! What a crowd.
This year, Drayton, you've got to tell the secret of that fabulously tasty chili.
Go on.
No secret. It's the meat. Don't skimp on the meat.
Don't skimp on the meat.
I got a real good eye for prime meat. Mm-hmm. Runs in the family. whoop. One of those hard-shelled peppercorns. I gotta say, I love this town. This town loves prime meat.
Wonderful. And what's interesting is like, there's a weird theme with this movie, right? And we'll talk about it as we go through some of the other scenes, but with Cook in particular, that scene is all about, there seems to be, the whole movie feels like a satire of 80s consumerism and like, you know, just how much we absorb and eat and so on, right? And it's just, it's kind of interesting how all the movies about that, and this is the scene where I love, there's one shot which I will remember vividly, is where the winner, the cup, actually has a bowl of chili on it. And yeah. it's not perfectly poured. It's just sploshed on and it's covering the whole goddamn trophy. And then Cook comes on and you can just see like this is the thing. He's playing around with it. It's jumping around. Literal man meat is splashing all over the place and no one cares. It's wonderful. It's... This is the thing I'm going to be maybe bringing back every so often. The movie is a black comedy, and it's a satire of like over consumerism in the 80s. It's very 80s in that sense, and very much about that. But I feel like the problem is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre being a satire feels very weird at this point in time. So it feels very out of place.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, Toby Hooper, like we've said earlier, he intended the original to be a satire as well. So he was thinking, let's do a satire again, but make it about something that's more up to date. So obviously the whole yuppie culture and a lot of the inspiration for the characters and what he wanted the killers to be going after is like, the screenwriter was like in a mall one day and saw all these yuppies in like pastel clothes and stuff going around just buying everything. And like, and he thought, well, what can these guys are definitely going to be the targets in my new movie.
Yeah.
So it's definitely there, you know, and that's, so there's like the satire is changed slightly, but it wasn't obvious in the first movie. That's the thing. The satire wasn't obvious. So it's not like people don't get it this time around. That's the trouble.
Yeah, I feel like maybe it's the other way around. The idea, like the satire for the satire of the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre is about how we have been numbed by violence because of the Vietnam War and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
But the problem is all you saw, even though you never got to see a lot of blood in the original movie, is just the violence, and we were shocked by it. So instead of us being numb by it, we're actually shocked by it, which was the opposite effect of what I assumed Toby Hooper was trying to do.
Yeah, what I meant by the audience don't get it is they don't get the connection. They don't get the connection of like how the both can be a satire, both movies. They just thought the audience would have wanted a Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 at like the first, they would want basically the first one again, but like, you know, slightly different. That's what.
But anyway, but this one, I think the problem with this movie is that the satire is so loud and in your face that it does lead to a very confusing whiplash. Because the satire, the comedy satire is very much up front, unlike the other one where it was very sort of well hidden. This one's very much loud. And it does lead to some fantastic moments. And speaking of yuppies, two things I want to mention. First of all, the makeup work by this is by the legend Tom Savini.
Yeah.
The legend himself, who has made some fantastic makeup stuff like for various different movies and so on. He is renowned for doing a lot of body horror and gore. He's fantastic. So he did, we'll talk about him, but he also did, he was the one in charge of like all the, like the grandpa makeup and stuff like this. But there was a deleted scene, which has really saddened me slightly. There was a deleted scene, one very lengthy scene where they were going to gather the meat for the chili. Okay. Where the whole family were in their truck and they drive into a car park full of like fraternity yuppies doing like a hazing.
Yeah.
And literally you got the whole family parked there in the parking lot waiting to go. And then Leatherface comes out and slaughters everyone. There's about 25 people horribly slaughtered in variously wonderfully gory ways. But that was deleted for pacing purposes.
Right. Okay, I'm surprised because Cannon really wanted all the monstrous stuff, didn't they?
But I know. I was so surprised that scene got removed. But
yeah,
it got totally removed. And it's probably the best place to see all of Tom Savini's work. Except, let's go back a bit. Can we talk about the opening scene?
With the yuppies in the car?
Yes.
Yes. If you're going right back to the beginning, I wanted to... there's something that's really interesting. You know how we open the movie like with the text crawl?
Yes.
Like the original, which I'll play a little bit of that. So it sounds like this.
On the afternoon of August 18th, 1973, five young people in a Volkswagen van ran out of gas on a farm road in South Texas. Mm-hmm. Four of them were pretty standard.
But when I was watching it, I was thinking, this is definitely like missing something because of that tone of that, that 80s tone of that voiceover. I was thinking, it's definitely missing something. And it clicked what it was. And listen to this.
On the afternoon of August 18th, 1973, five young people in a Volkswagen van ran out of gas on a farm road in South Texas. Four of them were never seen again. The next morning, the one survivor, Sally Enright, was picked up on a roadside.
Oh, he knew the A-team.
Sally said she had broken out of a window in hell.
Oh, my God, I love this.
The Texas massacre has not stopped. It haunts Texas. It seems to have no end.
But it's like the tone of his voice said it reminded me so much of the opening of the A-Team. And I thought, I just wonder if that'll work. And I'll put it together.
It does work.
It works perfectly.
This is a crossover I didn't think we ever needed, but we now need it now. Leatherface versus B.A. Baracus.
But the characters in this movie are larger than life, like the A-Team, aren't they? That's the thing.
Yeah, so basically, if the A-Team did turn up in this movie, it would just work. Yeah. It's fucking hilarious. It's ace.
But anyway, then it moves on to the
thing.
Couple of crazy yuppies in a sports car.
Which introduces to a way to the lead character in this movie, technically, which is Stretch.
Yes.
Who, Stretch is a DJ, basically. She's sort of a rock DJ that plays from like 8 o'clock at night till about 2 in the morning. She plays all these rock hits and stuff like that as it goes along. But she gets a couple of hot, but she gets phone calls. And she gets phone calls from these two terrible yuppies in the car who are just assholes. Like, wow! What dicks?
On the open request line on Kay Oakland in Burke Burnett, Texas, Red River Rock and Roll from the tip-top of the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex.
Dex, let's give Stretch a call and see what she says.
What kind of name is Stretch?
No.
Red River Rock and Roll request line, this is Stretch.
Go Stretch! Buzz.
I rigged the brick!
And from all the senior boys at Wheeler High to all the senior girls who are so stuck up, call you're on the road to nowhere.
Oh, you mean we're on the road to nowhere?
No, baby! We're on the road to Texas OU weekend in Dallas! You're on the road to nowhere!
Put the horse, baby!
Real funny, guys. Okay, you want to hang up now? Tying up the line. Hey, come on.
No way, baby!
We got a lot more.
Yeah, they're just like completely drunk while driving and just doing whatever the hell they feel like it, which is interesting because the victim, they're the only real sort of, they're the only fodder characters, aren't they, in the entire movie. Normally in these like horror movies, you get like a buildup of lots of kills with fodder characters, and there's only these two that are the fodder characters. And you normally would set up characters that the killers are killing. You'd set them up as victims and you feel sorry for them. But you really want these guys to be killed.
Yeah, which is, again, the total polar opposite to the original Texas Chainsaw. Because the original Texas Chainsaw, yes, some of the characters were annoying. We'll admit that. But you never actually wanted them to die. And it kind of shows how maybe in the 80s, because of all the slasher stuff going on, the dynamic of horror movies changed from how it was in the early 70s, where in the early 70s, you didn't want anyone to die. Because you never felt like, you never cheered for the bad guy. In this case, we totally want Leatherface to actually do one with them. We want him to completely destroy them. And it is, honestly, this entire opening scene is so satisfying. And honestly, in the terms of its construction, it's probably the best constructed scene in the whole movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they're having the conversation over the radio and they are being, you know, annoying Stretch, like, to all hell. And then suddenly a truck goes by them. And it's like, oh, what the fuck is this weird, crazy freaking truck? By the way, before then, this is the most Texas thing I can think of. They are drunk in a Cadillac, driving at super fast speeds, shooting with a gun any road sign that's on the way.
They are completely nuts. It's like, it's definitely like a comic character, isn't it? This isn't like, you can't, people aren't actually like this. This is setting the tone early of what this movie is going to be like.
And you know what's interesting? It passed this tone of Texas, or at least Dallas and wherever else they've been at, being like just a bunch of crazies, continue on a bit. Because in another scene later, there's a whole bunch of drunks, and all the drunks are just, again, they're over the top and ridiculous. Maybe kind of showing, maybe there were more scenes of this are showing that Texas is a hellhole. So half of these people need to die anyway. So
I love the fact that those characters are background, though. They're so loud, but they can't really be the background, can they? They kind of...
can't ignore the fact that all these loudmouth, crazy drunks and bad people in Texas are just there. It's like, you can't avoid them. It's almost, I can imagine, like, if you were an introvert... And you know, you don't like people much, and you saw this movie going, fuck, this confirms it even more. People suck. But then obviously that with that truck scene comes in, they come in the truck, and suddenly I love the pop-up because Leatherface strapped with a dead body, by the way, which did you actually ever find out what the dead body was?
No, I'm not sure about that one. I got quite confused by it. I didn't know who it was.
Okay, so the dead body is the hitchhiker from the original movie.
Ah, right. That's kind of interesting because the hitchhiker is... the Chop Top is a similar character to the hitchhiker, isn't he, in terms of the...
Do you actually want to... There's a backstory to this. Do you want me to continue with Chop Top? Okay, so the backstory is that Chop Top is Hitchhiker's identical twin brother.
Right, I was gonna,
who wasn't in the original movie because he was in Nam.
Right, okay. Yeah,
he comes
cool.
back and traumatized that his brother's been horribly murdered, decides to keep him.
Right, okay.
And so Leatherface and Chop Top just keep him around and strap him along on all his adventures as if he's still part of the family.
Excellent. Yeah, so like they basically... Leatherface pops out, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And he's just like, attacks him with a chainsaw. He saws the top of the head off one of them.
That is
a great Tom Savini effect where basically he wanted it to be the real actor. He didn't want it, like a dummy, massive, like obvious dummy head.
Yeah.
So he constructed like this almost like a balloon type of thing that would, when you fill the balloon, it would like raise up and make like a prosthetic look like it's flipping up. So it looks like it's an actual, it's actually attached to the actor and it looks dead convincing. So they only cut to like a dummy head for like the actual decapitation type element when it actually gets chopped off.
It's honestly really exciting when that scene happened because it looked really good. And it's, again, it just shows that this movie, when it does its gore stuff, it does it really well. And it's another scene that's going to literally stick in my head, although, you know, it can easily be chopped off with that one. But yeah, it's really, really well done. And basically him seeing Leatherface attacking these two yuppies and destroying the car and is just absolute gold. But as a little bit of a thing here, I love the fact that that is because of some weird technical glitch. They couldn't hang up the phone, which means there was a recording of this horrible, gruesome murder live on the radio happened.
When I was watching that bit, that scene, when she was telling them to hang up and they went, "No, we're not hanging up." I was like so confused of like the technical issue of why they couldn't cut them off. It was it's only because the plot required them to be on the line. It was like, it's a really, really odd situation where you can't cut off because you could have anyone, any psycho ringing up to the radio station. And if you can't cut them off, then that is a crazy technical problem. But they had
huge. But huge that, problem.
But that creates the rest, like the main plot thread for the rest of the movie, because it almost becomes like a detective story in a way of like,
yeah, it becomes
needing to expose the family via using this recording as evidence.
So here's a special request we're doing this afternoon and tonight. You steady listeners know we're playing this every hour. This is for Lefty.
So it gets, so yes, by that point, it's the whole story is that Lefty goes to Stretch, which and says, like, play this on the radio as a means of luring them out, basically. Mm. And it leads to some very interesting bits in the radio station by that point. We're introduced to Chop Top at that point.
Oh, yeah. That is what I think perhaps the creepiest scene, where Stretch has just finished a shift.
Yes.
And in the shadows, just in the waiting room kind of area, there's, like, Chop Top's just there. And I've got the clip of him, actually.
Sure.
So let's hear this.
I wanna buy some radio ad time.
Oh, I love him. He's so creepy.
Are you fucking crazy? We are closed. Off the air till tomorrow. You'll have to just come back.
No, but whoa. So this is Radio Land, huh? The infinite turtle, the waves through the ether fuzz, roll on forever. Roar! Can't close that. Hi, I know what you're thinking. This is weird, huh? But I can handle it.
He's so manic.
You're my fave. Me and Bubba, my little brother, we listen to you every night.
Bubba.
Music is my life. You know, you're my fave, but I get too embarrassed to phone in my request. It's too disembodied, you know. But now that we're here in flesh and blood, I could maybe make a request and it'd still count, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gonna count.
Sure.
Well, what about... Iron Butterfly. You know, like
music choice,
you know, Vita Degata, baby. Oh, it's heavy. You know, I've never been to a radio station before. Do you think you could do me a tour, huh?
I love the tour.
Tour?
The tour is great. Like, it's here, it's here, it's here.
Sure. Sure. But seriously, quick. And it ends at the exit sign.
It will end at the exit sign.
Oh, boy. Okay. Yeah, sure.
Okay, your tour. Here's your tour. Here's your tour. Here's your lamp.
Damn.
Here's
Top Rider.
Ooh. Rubber Man.
Rubber Man. Okay.
Armadillo.
Oh, my God.
So
here's Mr. Shark.
Oh, Mr. Shark.
Oh, my God.
There's some flowers. Rolodex.
It's just random shit she can find. I love it.
There's a lamp. Oh. And there's the exit sign. Tour's over.
Basically, it's, I love the nervous energy and the fact that he's trying his best to be like charming, but he's not charming. That's him being as charming as possible because he's acting like he's really interested in the stuff that she's saying, but he's like he doesn't know that how creepy he is because he can't even be like nice when he's trying to be nice.
Yeah. And even this is the tone for the whole movie. I feel like in terms of how conversations work, that's the tone. It's this weird, nervous, anxious energy that kind of goes back and forth. I love at the end of that clip where basically it says, now you can leave. It's like, yeah. Leave. Goodbye, sir.
And there's lots of different variations of goodbye. Like there's even like a high one, like goodbye, good night.
And you're like, and that goes on for a little too long, admittedly. But then after that, it goes and Leatherface turns up, which was the only part that gave me an actual jump scare, because it's the bit where she where Leatherface is hiding in the record room.
Yeah, it's a really good setup, actually, because there's, like, she's in front... The scene is lit really dark and creepy.
Yeah.
And there's a scene where she's in front of the area where all the records are, and that... She's in the doorway, and that's all sort of dark. But, obviously, the lights come on abruptly in the records room, and he just flies through the doorway at her. It's great.
It's a genuinely that made me jump. That honest to God made me jump. And it's a great little scene, which leads to Ben basically Leatherface chases around the studio. And it's a really good little moment. Like, she hides in the room and then Leatherface just breaks through a wall. But okay, let's talk about Leatherface in general in this movie.
Okay. Leatherface is an interesting cat because he's made to be like most likable out of all of them.
Yes.
Because there's an odd kind of love story that's set up between him and Stretch. I mean, it's very clearly one-sided, but
yes,
it's there. But I say it's one-sided. There's an element of some of the dialogue where she says stuff like, I don't think it's going to work between us. You wouldn't say that if there wasn't... You'd just be like totally crazed all the time. But she actually says lines like it's a proper relationship. And I think that's going back to the parody of John Hughes movies, isn't it, kind of thing?
Yes. It feels as if, like, this is the point where... Number one, this is the first movie ever where someone literally is able to talk down a serial killer, by the way, in any horror movies. Like, say, oi, stop. Let's talk about this. But the movie, that scene in particular, is... It feels like an ongoing joke. Because the whole point is, they talk... She has her legs wide open, by the way, like hidden, like between two things there. And the chainsaw is going very uncomfortably up her leg, right?
Yeah.
But then what's funny is this clear, the joke here, and I got the joke, I'm going, okay, is there is some technically some sexual tension, at least one-sidedly, there's some sexual tension going on. And this is basically a premature ejaculation joke.
Yeah, like, and she says something like, how good are you?
How weird is that?
And then, that kind of turns him on a bit, doesn't it? Like,
and then at this point, he gets the chainsaw and he starts to rev it, but he can't get it to work.
Yeah. And it's a very... it's a hilarious scene, but it also is very uncomfortable. And when the actors were doing that scene, they were like, they found it difficult to make it sexy because they were directed to make it sexy.
How do you make that scene
and
sexy?
It was very challenging, but I think they did a good job in the end because it is kind of, I don't find it sexy, but I kind of, in a jokey kind of way,
Yeah, I
know what they were trying to do, and I think the actors did a good job in the end.
They did try, goddammit. Yeah. They did try. But it was all just a big, because that scene is both funny and awkward, especially at the end when Leatherface is literally, while he's finally got it revved, starts pelvic thrusting with the chainsaw in her direction and then runs away.
I know. Also, by the way, I wanted to mention, you know, in that set, I mean, we'll talk about the sets in general because the sets are amazing. Mm. But like there's a very distracting neon clock behind her in that scene.
Yes.
And it's like, I think, I mean, in that, that's just a product of the time, having that kind of like everything neon, like you've got to have neon elements all over the place. But the production designer, literally they had to get odds and ends from everywhere. So that's probably just one of those things where, oh, that looks quite good. Let's throw that in there. But that's the only bit of production design where I find it too distracting. That neon clock is like, right, I'm just focused on it like a lot. Even in a scene where you've got a chainsaw going between someone's legs, I'm thinking there's a bright neon clock there. Like,
hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
We're finally at, after a little while and some chasing about and everything else, we're at the theme park.
I know. The settings in this movie are really, really cool. Mm. And I love the fact that I just can't imagine doing all that work with those sets in like, what, 6 weeks or something, when the amount of time they shot it. It's insane. They had to be working ridiculous hours. Like,
yeah.
I can't believe they dressed all those sets and made. There's a huge tunnel scene that's like that's got stuff wall to wall, like for like, you know, like quarter of a mile it seems, and like this gets lit all the way down with like sort of weird kind of Christmas lights and stuff, and it's some really interesting stuff.
It's awesome. Once we get to the theme park in particular, it's by far the most awesome set. It is the biggest fun house. It's literally a fun house. And again, if we wanted to see what Toby Hooper was maybe trying to say about horror movies here, it's like, again, it's changed. It's no longer about saying, oh, look how scary this is. Like, people are rooting for the bad guy. People are having fun in horror movies. Let's literally make this a fun house. And they bloody do. There's a scene which makes me laugh all the time where Dennis Hopper comes in later when Stretch goes and chases after them, right? And they meet in the funhouse. And then at one point, it's like, you're here. And she literally just falls through a trap door and goes down a spiral slide. Like,
yeah, the spiral slide. There's like loads of like big chutes and stuff that people go down, like big circular tunnels and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's incredible to look at, really. It's strange because with the budget they had, God knows how they made it look that good.
It is the sets in this, the theme park set, is it's golden goose for me. I really flippin' loved it. Stretch does get captured at this point, although they have a weird interaction beforehand where Leatherface sees her in the thing, and instead, and to hide her and has a weird scene, they bloody put, oh my God, it's disgusting to talk about. And I feel really bad for Caroline Williams, who plays Stretch, who has to put on another person's face.
Yeah.
On and do and dance with Leatherface while tied up with ropes and chains.
Yeah. Ugh. It's really uncomfortable.
No good. Help. Help me. Please. Please help me. Can you help me get out of here? Can you help me get out of here? Put that down. Is it wet? It's wet. Put it down.
That character, I haven't mentioned him, by the way, yet. The character's face. That character was basically the companion and boss. Or, yeah, is it the boss of
radio
Stretch?
Producer.
Or radio producer. Yeah. He's like, he's a bit of a sort of John Wayne type character. And he's sort of like, Stretch is like the apple of his eye kind of thing. He really sort of loves her. So there's lots of sweet scenes between those two, isn't there? Building up to this point, which it actually makes it quite a tragic scene where you see him skinned, At like not just his face, but yeah, half his body is like off, is come off. I don't know how he's still alive, but
how is he functioning? How is he still functioning after that?
But yeah, Stretch has got his face. Leatherface puts his face onto her.
Yeah.
And he's basically just playing with her like she's a doll.
Yeah, and it starts dancing around and so on. It's really awkward. It's really uncomfortable. And then afterwards, obviously, as he leaves, you know, they have the interaction with the producer. The producer's still running around and then finally dies. And I love when he dies, he just goes, ah, shit.
Yeah.
That just and dies.
Another thing with him, though, is what before we move on, is like he spits a lot, which is so gross. And he's supposed to be a really likable character, but the spitting thing is supposed to be an endearing element of his character.
He spits a lot,
and I found it gross, and it really put me off him because I wanted to like him.
But like, I mean, look, I can get spitting, but imagine if he did it once, we're like, oh, okay. He does it every 5 minutes. Like, he's like, I'm not sure whether he's just constantly like chewing tobacco or he's just doing, he just constantly puts lurgies as well. There's a scene where he actually gets hammered constantly in the head by Chop Top, and literally one hit from the hammer puts a giant lurgy, just a giant spit comes out like a fountain. Jesus Christ!
I know. He almost uses spitting as like punctuation, doesn't he, to make his point?
Which is like, that'd be hilarious if it was genuine punctuation.
Quite
gross,
really. It's really gross.
Can we go to the ending where we talk about by this point where Stretch is captured, and they literally do a pseudo remake of the famous dinner scene?
Yeah, it's a recreation because. It's a recreation of the dinner scene in the original. Well, it's a similar kind of setup, isn't it? Stretch is at the head of the table like Sally was in the original movie. And they basically, the cook wants to finish her off in the similar way that Sally was attempted to finish her off by getting Grandpa involved.
Hooray! Oh, Grandpa's back. And it's really bizarre with Grandpa, by the way, because Grandpa's just, how is he still functioning after all this time? Other than just apparently using the powerful elixir of blood, that's all that's keeping him going.
I think the cook even says his age in this one. I think he says 146 years old or something.
Motherfucker, he's 146 years old. Jesus. But yeah, he does that. He does a full reenactment of that. And it's pretty much shot for shot at this point, actually.
Yeah, he's got the hammer and he's trying to hit her over the head and he keeps missing. I don't know about you, with Grandpa in this movie, I thought because this movie is an obvious comedy, I wanted them to really elevate Grandpa in a way because the family always bigs him up like he's this super killer, that super like sort of butcher.
Yeah.
And I wanted this movie to be fantasy in that respect and have him actually be quite powerful. I think that would have been hilarious. Dennis Hopper comes in to try and save the day and Grandpa throws a hammer all the way across the room and hits him and it's like a super throw kind of thing.
Or maybe the idea that he was faking the whole time, he stands up and does kung fu and you know what? Perfect! This movie's dumb enough as it is!
I think it was missing that sort of elevated Grandpa. I think it needed to lift Grandpa up a bit because the actor does a good job of kind of like bringing him to life a little bit and making him more animated than the Grandpa in the original movie.
Yeah.
But there isn't much for him to do, is there?
Nah, there isn't much happening there. He's just there just because he's part of the family, basically. Yeah. He's part of the mythos. He's part of the thing. He's just there. There's no real reason why he's still hanging about. But what's interesting, actually, is that right after that, though, like he's doing the thing, he does get a couple of noggins in the back of the head. Then Dennis Hopper comes in. And oh, boy. Wow. He comes in, chainsaw blooming, saying he is the Lord of the fucking harvest.
I'm the Lord of the harvest.
Who's that? Some new health food bunch?
Can I just say, like, realistically, Leatherface, they actually have a duel. Leatherface has a duel with Dennis Hopper. And There's no way he could survive any of this, right? Like, if I'm surprised the sequels happened after this, basically, because, oh my goodness.
Yeah, so they're sword fighting with chainsaws.
Hardcore.
And so, Dennis Hopper gets his large chainsaw and just sticks it through him. In the remainder of the fight, Leatherface has got a chainsaw through his stomach.
Yeah.
It's a very cool practical effect, actually, because they rigged up a chainsaw that will show that it's moving either side of the prosthetic.
Yeah.
So it looks like it's constantly, like, going round the chain.
Yes.
So it looks really, really cool, but, like, I don't know how. He goes on for ages in this fight, like, trying to fight Dennis Hopper with a chainsaw through him. It's incredible.
It's hardcore. And it's just, it's the most manic scene in the whole movie when you think about it. It's Dennis Hopper shouting and raving, being the Lord of the Harvest, beating Leatherface, who gets stabbed by a big one, and then they're fighting dual-wielding fucking chainsaws. It's manic.
I wanted to mention also, Cook's demise is pretty funny because he basically gets a chainsaw up the arse, basically.
Yes.
Not really sort of viciously. He gets it like that. And basically, after that point where all the chaotic stuff is going on, Cook is like under the table. And I've got a clip of him at that point. It's so funny.
Small businessman. Always get to the ass.
Always get to the ass.
Sure took care of my hams. Made a trip to the hospital. looks bad. Sure burned my beans bad on that one.
Oh my God!
I absolutely love this.
Sure burned my beans bad on that one.
It's fucking hilarious. Oh my God.
I think I'm going to say that now. That's going to be one of my sayings.
Save that. Play that whenever you just feel like, you know, he's going to burn your beans on that one. Oh my God.
I think whenever we have a laughing fit, where we really sort of overdone it with laughing, we burned our beans on that one.
We definitely burned our beans on that one. Oh my God. But what's funny in that scene afterwards, he finds that I need to find one thing that can stop this. So he takes out a goddamn fucking grenade and just is ready to blow up the base, basically, with this grenade.
Yeah.
And the explosion's glorious.
It is, yeah. He's a crazy character, the Cook, because he's constantly talking all the time. It's like, it almost feels like it's like noise at some point. You don't even like listen to him all the time because he's always nattering on.
Yeah, and a lot of it does sound like nonsense. Like, it just sounds like nothing until he finally says something of note. Like that scene we just played, you know, he didn't need to say all of that, but he did say all of that. He could have just said, ow, my butt hurts, oh, oh, oh. Instead, he went on and on and on.
And he's also actually still going on the Cook. There's a really iconic line, actually, that he says when we know we've gone on about the whole like weird love story element between Bubba or AKA Leatherface.
Yes.
He finds out that Stretch wasn't killed by Leatherface.
Yes.
And there's like he's basically wanting to know what's going on. And there's this interesting, like, sort of conversation where he says, what's it going to be? Is sex or the saw kind of thing? And it's a very, really cool line. Let's listen to that.
Go on. You got one choice, boy. Sex or the saw? Sex is, well, nobody knows. But the saw is family.
It's family.
Wait till granddad hears about this. Take her away.
Oh, brilliant. That's
She's
actually
in the
a good
garbage
scene.
Now.
Yeah, I love that line. And it's quite iconic to have the Saw is family in this movie because it's like, I can see why this became a cult film because in this movie, it's more quotable than the original, isn't it?
Because it's got some corker of lines. And the thing is with the original is the original one's just self... The dialogue wasn't important. It was the action that was more important. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
While here, because most of it's a parody and satire and more jokey, the lines are more important and really stands out.
There's also actually a line that was sampled in a Primus song. Do you know that really? One? And that's become now a famous line that Chop Top says...
Dog Wheel Hunt, get that bitch, Leatherface, get that bitch. Dog Wheel Hunt.
Yeah, that's sampled in the Primus song. Jerry was a race car driver. Remember that song?
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah,
wow.
It's in that song. So I heard that, and I then could place it because I didn't know what it was from when I heard that song.
Yeah.
But now at conventions. People always ask Bill Moseley, who played Chop Top, to say, Dog Will Hunt.
Love it. I love it.
Dog Will Hunt.
Let's wrap up to the very, very end, because the very end is basically the base is blown up and Chop Top goes up and is chasing Stretch up to the bit. And this is also another scene that I'm going to remember for the rest of my visual life because it's manically nonsense. They run up to this big tower thing, like a giant mud hut. I don't know what
it is. It's amazing.
It's so bizarre. I don't know what it is, but it's awesome.
Well, is it like a theme park? It's out in the theme park, isn't it? So it's kind of like a big sort of watchtower type.
I think so. And they go up to the watchtower. And then the first thing you see is Grandma.
Yeah. And the thing is, she is she still alive? Is she preserved somehow? Or are they just thinking that she's still with them?
I personally think she's dead and that they just somehow preserved her after a while, I think. Because there's no movement from her at all.
The odd thing about that scene... is like, I was watching, I was thinking, did she just move then? Did she move? I was thinking a lot of the time, is, you know, because it looks like she's moving at times, like when Chop Top is like, but I'm thinking, is he moving her like a puppet kind of thing?
We'll never know. The big mystery. But then after this, obviously, there's a confrontation with Chop Top and Stretch. Stretch gets the chainsaw that Grandma is holding and literally knocks Chop Top off the tower into literally the garbage, like down a chute, right?
Yeah.
But the final image, oh my God, it's wonderfully weird, where she is screaming manically, dancing with a chainsaw, and the camera moves away to see her in this tiny form going flipping mental in this tower, and then it just cuts.
Yeah, it's basically ends like how Leatherface was dancing in the original with his chainsaw.
Yes.
But it's so odd when it's like one of the hero characters doing it.
It's so weird. I love it, but it's fucking weird.
Right, you say there's a hard cut and then this comes on at the credit music.
Yeah. Hard fucking cut. Hard cut to this.
It's just so nice, this music.
It's pure whiplash. Oh my God. Can I also say, by the way, speaking of how the music is on, a lot of the music, can I say some of the music is really kind of on the nose? Like, some of the tracks are very much on the goddamn nose.
Yeah, deliberately, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, there's some... I mean, there's one of the songs they play on the radio is literally saying, oh, my God, there's trouble ahead. And it's like, excuse... duh! You know?
Yeah.
Oh, it's good times. And that's how the movie ends, and it... Oh, what a movie this is. I've watched this twice. I watched this twice in a row, and then I watched it years ago. But then I watched it twice, because the first time I watched it... I almost forgot everything existed, and I kind of felt like I needed to wash over me. And so now I watched it again, and I just kind of have this weird appreciation for it. And so I want to know, before we go into the trashometer, I want to think, like, this is your first time watching it.
Yeah.
How did it feel in your first time watching this?
I didn't think that I liked it at first. But when I really thought back and I thought, actually, I like that bit and I like that bit, when I was sort of breaking it down in my head. And I think the main reason why I didn't like it, I know it sounds silly, Sure. But you know how much I like music in film, like in terms of score? The score is absolutely awful in this movie.
Oh, it's pants.
And it cheapens the film so much because a lot of visually, the film looks expensive. They've done a really good job with production design and costume and sets, and the actors are good. The music makes the whole thing seem like a very cheap movie, and that really puts me off. That's the main thing. And it sounds silly, just the music can't put you off an entire film, but it's important to have the music right, especially a Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie.
I'll say this as well. Like, when that music playing a bit cheaply, it also showed off some of the other cheaper elements in the film.
Yes.
Like, it showed it off a bit. When there's some really great moments in the movie, and then there's some moments where you're sitting there going, huh, that does look a bit cheap. That does look a little rough. That doesn't look entirely great.
It reminded me of, you know, like Full Moon movies.
Yeah.
You know how their scores are always like sort of, it's synthesized kind of orchestra, isn't it? Which never sounds good. If you're going to use synth, actually make it sound like synth, not trying to be orchestra, because it's... Back then, you couldn't use a synth to make an orchestra, like.
Yeah, so basically it just sounds like someone's having way too much fun on a Casio keyboard, just having a bit of a wail. Right, so that was Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. Shall we see where this falls on the Trashometer?
Okay.
Trashometer.
Thank you. And right, if this is your first time listening to us, welcome and thank you for joining us for this, listening to our review of Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. Oh boy. What we do, though, we review things a little bit differently around here. We don't do A-star ratings or number ratings or anything like that. We do something called a Trashometer, where we kind of find the right balance of good and bad. A good bad movie needs to be equally balanced of the good and the bad. And so we do that using a very particular scale. First of all, we've got tame. Tame basically means that it wasn't really fun, but in more the fact that it was kind of dull. Like, it didn't really do much for it. It might not even be that bad. It's just a bit boring, right? Then you go to tiny bit trashy. Tiny bit trashy basically means is that we had fun with it, but it kind of could have been more trashy. It could have been dumber. It could have been funner. It could have had a bit more something to it, but it's missing an element. Then you've got trash. This is the perfect sweet spot, the perfect balance, the ultimate chainsaw battle, as it were, of all these movies. It's the perfect cut, right? It's the right balance of good and bad. Then you've got too trashy. Too trashy means, even though we had fun with it, we are getting a little frustrated with it. It's getting a little bad. It's getting a little offensive. It's getting a little rough. It's getting a little bit of a tough sit, right? But we still had fun with it, and that's the most important thing. And then finally, at the very, very top, we have torture. Torture means it's all bad. There is no good in this. It was a horrible way to sit through. It was literally torturous to get through. And so, Ed, what would you put Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 on the Trashometer?
Right. This is actually quite a hard one to rank. Mm. And usually I already think what I'm going to rank it before I even go into the Trashometer. Mm. I'm going to have to sort of decide now, because it's like, it's difficult to... It's not perfect. It's not a perfect trash movie. So I definitely won't put it under trash. But it's you can't call it tame. I'm going to kind of try and rule this out, right?
Go for it.
Process of elimination. So it's not tame at all, because it's got some crazy stuff going on. I guess I can rule it out, because I don't think it's tiny bit trashy either. So I guess it's just going into too trashy, in my opinion, because it's not torture. I did find a lot of the movie was really good. Obviously, when I first watched it, I said I was kind of unsure about it. Mm. But there's a very good balance of comedy and horror, but it's not quite perfect. So, like for example, when I talked about Grandpa, if you went full like crazy with Grandpa and went to full comedy, you would have been going like all the way. That would have been an element that would have worked for me in this movie. But they didn't do that, so it's just at times going too much on one thing and not enough on the other. So I don't know. I think because it's too much in places that I don't like,
Yeah.
I guess it would have to be too trashy.
You know what? I would agree. Like, there are some genuinely some great moments in this movie, right? There's some scenes that are going to stick with my mind forever. But the problem is that there's two things fighting against it. Number one, it has the original constantly comparing itself, right?
Mm.
And it's... The problem is, it references the original and also tries to depart its way from the original, and it doesn't know which one it wants to do. It needs to stick with one or the other. Are you trying to mimic the original, or are you going really beyond the original? And it does that every so often. The second part as well is that the bits that were really good were really good, and the bits that were rough were pretty rough. They were hard to, and it's not, and I don't think, like, it doesn't hit the sweet spot of good bad. The parts which are rough and bad to sift through are kind of awkward and really uncomfortable to sift through and just didn't feel right. While there are going to be some memorable scenes, Dennis Hopper with chainsaws is probably going to be stuck in my memory forever. But you're right, I think too trashy kind of fits the bill.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because, like, it's either tiny bit or it's too trashy, but it's hard to call, because there are elements where you think it's not pushing it. It's not pushing it enough.
Yeah.
I think it'll have to go, because of the extreme stuff that is in this movie, it has to go into too trashy, I think.
Yep, let's put it into too trashy.
Too trashy.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, too trashy. Which, you know what, perfect sense. I think it was a hard one to define, because, like I said, I think this movie's kind of great in places, but this movie's also really bad in places.
That's kind of Tobey Hooper all over, unfortunately, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kind of great sometimes, kind of bad other times.
Tobey Hooper is one of those directors where he hasn't been really a consistent filmmaker, hasn't he? And I'm not sure whether he's just been given a bad hand, whether he just got lucky with the Texas Chainsaw. We don't know. But it's something that maybe in future, obviously he has passed away, which means we've only got the films he has. So it's something that we could always examine and say whether or not he actually was a good director and really was good with it, or was he, or maybe it was too experimental and he was too ahead of its time. Because if this movie came out now, this movie came out now instead of what happened then, I bet this would be a smash, because it would be very meta, it's very satirical, it's very over the top, it's very knowing of itself, it's comical, it's silly, it's all that. Mm. And I bet you would have done gangbusters. But at the time, and looking back at that version of it now, it just feels off.
Yeah. I mean, I can see what he was trying to go for, because it's like, it's a couple of years after Nightmare on Elm Street, isn't it? And Freddy Krueger was huge at that point. So, all right, let's make these guys like a comedy kind of horror team. But it just, not quite working, mate. Not quite working.
It didn't quite work. And you know what? I'm glad. You know what? Out of all the sequels, this one is still the most memorable and the most cult, because all the other movies after that don't have the same treatment. I'm glad this movie exists. It is proof that you can go completely off the wall in a different direction. Whether it's a good idea or not is entirely up to you. So,
and I also think the more times I watch it, I'm probably going to like it more.
Mm. I feel like it could be a grower. But I think the problem is that you have to sit through all the bits you don't like, or find a way to reevaluate the bits you didn't like to make it more enjoyable, I guess.
Make a supercut.
Wow, supercut. It should also include all the extra deleted scenes with all the gore in it, because I want to see 25 or 30 teenagers getting slashed to pieces. Why do we not have that bit?
Well, we have that in the latest one, don't we?
Oh, there we go. That's all you need. Just watch the new one if you want teenagers and young people getting completely slaughtered. Then. So just before we sort of wrap things up, we're going to do something we usually call do our plugins, where basically we'll just talk about what's been going on, what's up there, and what we've been happening on the channel, and anything else going on our socials. So Ed, so what's going on? Is there any new plans coming up ahead? Any videos already been up?
Well, the latest YouTube video is our Batman, 60s Batman like retro Saturday Rewind. That's our Saturday morning nostalgia show. So if you're interested in if you're interested in like old serials and old cartoons and TV shows, that is shows for you. And yeah, the latest one is where we look at the 60s Batman and also eat Lucky Charms. It's just like, if that appeals to you, check that one out.
Yeah, that's actually really, really good. I love that one. That was a lot of fun to do. If we'll have some new ones in future, which would be quite exciting. We're hoping to look and experiment with some new serials, so we'll see how that turns out. When it comes to the podcast, we've been doing a lot. I've been doing a lot recently of the Not So Trash reviews because they're a little different and they're easier to edit, but also just a little bit of fun. We've already got three up if you haven't seen the ones which were up previously. So we had we had Anne Marsh on in here, and he actually ended up talking a little bit about Patrick. We also then had one right after that where we talked about the Love Witch, and there's a new episode just out, literally was out this week, at the time of recording, which we did Bavarian Sound Studio, and it's a lot of fun to do that one. It's an alternative take, a little bit more academic, a little bit more serious, but it does really open your eyes a little bit about some of these lost movies.
Yeah, it's a really good listen, that show, because it's like, it mixes things up a little bit, because they are still like culty kind of movies, aren't they? It's not like, it's not completely off topic, but it's just a very different approach. And if, you know, if you wanted to something a little bit different that focuses on cult films, it is a really nice listen.
It's also just a means of excuse. It's just giving me more of an excuse to watch good movies, because I sometimes worry with this podcast that all I'm going to end up watching is just bad movies. And it's going to completely destroy my film taste.
I don't think that'll ever happen. You can always appreciate movies.
I'll always love bad movies, but I just want to kind of also prove to people I also watch good shit once in a while.
Yeah, I've been doing more on my TikTok as well, because TikTok is kind of taken off for me, and I'm doing a lot of videos on there. So like the latest one I looked at, I recently got a book on VHS cover art. So I've basically doing some videos looking through that book, and there's some really interesting stuff in there. So you can follow me at Harvey Retro on TikTok if you like.
Yeah, that's what we've been doing at the moment. Hopefully we've got some more stuff going on. We have a few ideas for the next few episodes, so keep an eye and look for when you want to see it coming up soon. But in the meantime, keep an eye on your trash. There might be some treasure in there. See you guys next time.
See you later, guys.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thank you for listening to this podcast episode and hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please share it around with movie lovers you know, maybe add a star rating or write a good review. All of this helps with the algorithm and provides us with more opportunities to reach the ears to a whole new bunch of bad film fanatics. Want to find out more about us? Then head over to our socials where we provide sneak peeks and up-to-date news on everything nostalgic and trashy. You can find our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages in the description. So please, follow us. See you next time, cinephiles.